Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Key to Evolving Beyond Ego. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Craig Hamilton, and for those of you who are just learning about me and my work, I'm the founder of Integral Enlightenment and the Academy for Evolutionaries, which is our educational arm. We offer a series of online programs that are really designed to help us undergo an authentic spiritual transformation in the midst of our often busy modern lives. And particularly doing that in an evolutionary context, meaning that we recognize that when any of us give ourselves to the spiritual life and to transforming ourselves, that we're actively participating in the evolution of all of us, of life, humanity, and consciousness itself. Now, the context for everything that I'll be speaking about today is that there's something that's beginning to awaken within many of us right now. There's a kind of urgent calling emerging. It's a calling to participate in evolution, the evolution of ourselves and the evolution of our world. I know many of us feel it when we look at the state of the planet, at the crises that we're facing or may face in the world. But I know a lot of us also just sense it when we tune into the opportunity that our moment represents. Now, how this might be showing up in your own experience is as a restlessness with the way things are, or a lack of contentment with the status quo of your life, even if your life's pretty good, or even if your life's really good. I meet many people who say, oh, everything's really working, but what? There's something more. You see, on top of this, for a lot of us, there's this sense that an extraordinary change is possible. In our deepest spiritual moments, our deepest experiences, we've sensed that there's a kind of profound transformation that we could undergo that would radically alter the course of our life, that would radically alter our experience of being alive, that would bring us into alignment with a cosmic sense of meaning and purpose, that would ultimately guide us in our every step. And in this awakening, we realize that it's not just that things could change for us personally, but that the way we come together could change radically as well. And that if enough of us commit ourselves to this process, the whole human experience could be dramatically elevated to something unlike anything the world has ever seen. Except, of course, in little bits here and there between a few committed spiritual people, because that's been going on for a long time. But we're sensing it's time for it to leap to another level and another level of scale. And I also know that many of us find ourselves feeling a bit stalled in our spiritual growth, meaning that we've awakened to a certain degree, we've tasted or glimpsed higher possibilities, we have high ideals and aspirations, but our actual moment-to-moment, day-to-day lives do not yet fully express these higher ideals that we aspire to, or these deeper truths that we've discovered, and these deeper ways of being that we've tasted. And I know we're all at different places on our journeys, so I can't really generalize, but for instance, some of us have done a lot of spiritual practice, but we haven't found it particularly liberating. I meet many people like this who've maybe been meditating for a long time, and they're kind of doing it because they know they should, but their practice is not on fire with spiritual depth and illumination. And if we're doing spiritual practice, it should be on fire. It should be illuminated by the depth of spirit itself. On the other hand, you might have found that your spiritual pursuits and practices have been very fruitful up to a certain point. You may have noticed some real changes in yourself. You've become more centered, less reactive, more present with others. But maybe you notice that this only really holds true when you're not under pressure. And when things fall apart or you find yourself in a challenging situation, perhaps there's conflict or distress, you tend to revert back to less evolved patterns in yourself. You become maybe emotionally overwhelmed or fearful, reactive, aggressive, or passive aggressive, as many of us spiritual types tend to go there, because we know we shouldn't be aggressive. So it comes out somewhere. Or maybe you've done a lot of work on yourself and have truly grown in significant ways to a point where you really have freed yourself from many of your past patterns, and you're able to navigate life consistently with a lot of grace and wisdom, and people tell you that you're an inspiration to them because of how much different you are than most people they know. And yet, despite these positive changes, you may know deep down in yourself that there's still a radical possibility, a much more radical possibility that you haven't yet stepped into, even in spite of all the positive growth there's been. And then I know there are those of us for whom our journey up to this point has initially been more outwardly focused. We've been giving ourselves largely to our contribution in the world. And because we're basically well-intentioned, good people, we've assumed we didn't need to do much work on ourselves. There didn't seem to be a lot of problems. But as time has gone on, we're starting to realize that if we really want the world to change, then people are going to have to change in a deep way. Because, after all, the world's inhabited by people. We could create the greatest social systems imaginable, but if those societies are still made up of unevolved, relatively unconscious people, they're going to be plagued by the same problems that have confronted us since the beginning of time, or at least the beginning of the human race. So we're waking up to the reality that we need to evolve ourselves if we want to create a more evolved world. So we've all come to this exploration along different pathways, but what I think we probably all have in common is a sense that something much more profound is possible, and we're at least open to the possibility that it might not have to take a lifetime or many lifetimes to bring it about. And this is important because in the face of life's challenges and all the busyness of our modern lives, it's easy to lose touch with this deeper sense of potential and to even start to doubt that such a lofty possibility is real. But it's been my experience that this radical possibility that so many of us sense is not just a passing altered state of consciousness, and it's definitely not an illusion. It's a real thing. It's a real potential, and it does not have to take a lifetime to radically transform. There's an extraordinary kind of shift that is more immediate than most of us would imagine, and accessible. And that's what I want to speak about today. So I'm going to give you as much as I can in the next maybe 90 minutes, including illustrating some of the core shifts in your approach to the spiritual path that give access to this evolutionary shift beyond ego that I'm speaking about. And then at the end of the seminar, for any of you who are interested in learning more or going deeper into what I'm sharing today, I'll take a few minutes to let you know about an opportunity to continue our work together. Okay? And I want to start by giving you a brief overview of how I got here. I've spent basically my entire adult life, since shortly after I got out of college. Well, actually, while I was in college, I was doing the same thing. But essentially, I've been exploring how the spiritual path needs to evolve to meet the demands of 21st century life and 21st century people. And I was always a great lover of the wisdom of the world, of the great religious and spiritual traditions of the East and the West. I started meditating in my late teens. I studied religious studies as a minor when I was in the university. I did my pilgrimage to the East after I got out of college. But I always had this sense that so many of us in the West, in the contemporary world, were trying to apply ancient spiritual technologies to modern problems. And it seemed like there had to be a spirituality that was more in step with our times, with our lives. And this inquiry really kicked into high gear when I joined what I've come to call a living laboratory of evolution. And it was entirely organized around conscious spiritual transformation in a contemporary integral evolutionary context, meaning a scientifically informed, up-to-date worldview that wasn't relying on ancient myths to support our spiritual ideas and practices. And in this context, we lived our lives as a kind of 24/7 evolutionary experiment in how to live an authentic spiritual life in a contemporary world. And this inquiry took place first and foremost between those of us within the community, but it also extended far beyond our little petri dish because we published a well-known magazine called What is Enlightenment? And in this magazine, we traveled the world meeting with other spiritual and cultural luminaries, asking this question about how the spiritual path needs to evolve to meet the demands of modern life. And I was editor of the magazine for 8 years, so we were out engaging this inquiry in the world as well as in our own experiment. In this role, I also had an opportunity to be part of evolutionary spiritual think tanks like the Synthesis Dialogues with the Dalai Lama, Deepak Chopra's Evolutionary Leaders Forum, Ken Wilber's Integral Institute, all of which are amazing organizations exploring this issue from different angles as well. I participated in this evolutionary laboratory for 13 years, and it was here that I first became aware of how challenging this issue of ego is for those of us on a spiritual path. You see, living in a spiritual community, particularly in a kind of open-minded, forward-looking, inquiry-based community, afforded an opportunity to see some things about the human condition that are not normally apparent. And I'll explain what I mean. You see, most of us, spiritual folks, are convinced that we deeply want to change and evolve in all the right ways. We want to be a good person. We want to be enlightened. We want to transform. We want to evolve beyond ego. And we therefore assume that most of the obstacles to our higher evolution are external obstacles. Meaning we think that if only all of the circumstances, inner and outer, would line up just right, that we would leap to the outer edges of our highest potential in an instant, or at least pretty soon. In other words, we think if only we had enough time for our spiritual practice, enough support and camaraderie surrounding us, and the right guidance and the right environment, that we would just soar spiritually. We would just be enlightened. And it's a convenient theory because for most of us, this theory never gets tested by reality. Why? Because in this world of our busy modern lives, the circumstances really never line up just perfectly. There's never just enough time to do all the spiritual practice and retreats and workshops that you want. There's never enough support around us because we have a lot of people who are less interested in this than we are. So we can carry on believing this. But you see, in this evolutionary laboratory, this 24/7 spiritual inquiry, we had a unique opportunity to test this theory because the conditions could not have been better. Our life was entirely organized to support our individual and collective evolution. We had this incredible supportive community of sincere spiritual practitioners who were utterly committed to their own growth and each other's growth. We spent several hours a day engaging in powerful, vibrant spiritual practice, meditating together, engaging together. We had outstanding and direct accessible spiritual guidance. Our work life was integrated with our spiritual lives. How many of us get that? And the thing is, you see, initially, this seemed to be everything that could possibly be required to catalyze everyone's radical evolution. What more could you want? Our inner life was elevated to a profound level of well-being. In this environment, pretty much everybody was living in an elevated state of consciousness most of the time. So guess what we found in our laboratory? When all the external obstacles to change have been removed, a stark reality reveals itself. When it comes to our higher spiritual development, our higher self-evolution, most of us don't want to change all that much. Not really. And let me clarify. Most of us want things to change, meaning we want to feel better, we want to be happier, we want our lives to go smoothly, we want our relationships to be good. But we don't want to have to change our deeply ingrained habits of being, our habits of relating to others, our habits of identifying with and reacting unconsciously to the thoughts and feelings that run through us. The reality is that there is a big part of us that does not want to let go of the familiar ways of being and behaving that we're accustomed to. Why? Because we don't want to get outside of our comfort zone. There's a primitive, deeply ingrained impulse toward the preservation of the way things are. So over and over again in this context, we all essentially saw the same pattern. We would wake up into an expanded level of consciousness, and then we would fall back asleep, contracting back into the narrow egoic self. We'd step out of the ego and into a completely different, more enlightened part of the self, often for extended periods of time, weeks, maybe even months, only to find ourselves retreating back into it again. I can speak from my own experience that in the midst of this intensive spiritual practice community, I had many powerful experiences, insights, openings, deepenings, some of them lasting for days, some for weeks, some for months. But no matter how far out there I would seem to go, in the end, I'd always find that I somehow ended up more or less back in the same place. Meaning things about me would change, but I wouldn't really change. I was still the same person. I would still react out of the old patterns, still at times be insecure and fearful, socially self-conscious, sometimes falling into self-doubt on one hand or flipping into overconfidence or arrogance on the other hand. And maybe you can recognize some version of this pattern in your own experience if you've been doing spiritual work for a while, although I'm sure the details would be different. But the question that we were really brought to in our experiment was, why is it this way? Meaning, once you get all those external obstacles taken care of, and it's smooth sailing, theoretically, and if what we really want is to awaken, to become more conscious, to realize our potential, why wouldn't we just jump at the opportunity when it presents itself? Why wouldn't we let go of everything when the higher potential revealed itself? See, what we had to confront is that most of us self-proclaimed evolutionaries, spiritual practitioners, are people with evolutionary aspirations, but deep down we're still largely being run by some very ancient, not very evolutionary software. You see, the reason even the perfect circumstances and even the most elevated spiritual experiences don't have the power to lift us to this higher level of being is that we're still operating within ancient habits of consciousness. Remember, for the vast tracts of our animal and human evolution, we've existed within what you could call survival consciousness, in which the name of the game was always just surviving. And all of this is still deeply wired into us. So changing it is a big deal. So here we are. Until now, the organizing principle of human life has basically been survival. And now here we are, a generation that has the opportunity to live in a completely different way, where our survival needs are basically met, I'm sure for everyone on this call, on this seminar. And we now can focus on the flourishing of our higher human potentials and creativity, of our emergent spiritual potential. But we're still all patterned inside ways of being that are antithetical to that higher flourishing. What are these ways of being that come so natural to us? We have a habit of wanting to feel safe and secure, rather than recognizing that the unknown, that insecurity, is really the source of vitality, change, vibrance. I'll give you an example. How many of us know that we feel most alive when we're taking what you might call healthy creative risks, meaning when we're stepping forward, trying new things, exploring, saying things that we're not sure how they're going to land, when we're really out there on our own edge? Most of us probably know that's where the juice of life is. That's where a human being comes fully alive. Yet in spite of that, how often do we hesitate, take the easier, less risky path, hold back, tentative, not sure, because we don't know what's going to happen? So part and parcel of this clinging to safety and security is this desire for certainty rather than being open to what we don't know. Which again, it probably made sense at a certain point in our evolution. Sticking with the sure thing was the surest way to stay alive. But that's not our situation anymore. Similar to that, there's this habit of wanting to keep everything the same. Not wanting things to change. Which, as you can see, in a context where we're trying to evolve, can be a real problem. Trying to maintain the status quo, fear of change. For example, have any of you ever stayed in an unhealthy relationship that you knew was no longer serving the higher flourishing of the individuals? Or in a job that you had outgrown and you knew you needed to move on? And if you haven't seen that in yourself, you sure know other people who've done probably both of those, right? And why? Because we didn't know what was around the corner. So the unhealthy familiar is more attractive than the uncertainties of an unknown future, even if we know that what we're currently doing isn't good for us or good for anyone. We also have a habit of, when we confront challenges and problems, instead of being open to new possibilities and leaning into the future and in our own creative response, we look to the past. And we basically repeat the patterns of the past in response to difficulties. We also have a habit of blaming external circumstances or other people for our difficulties and challenges, rather than taking as much responsibility as we can and being generative of the kind of future that we're committed to. And it's not to say that we're not in external circumstances, and there are ways in which we're victims, meaning ways in which we're impacted by others, and that's all true. But what's the most generative and empowered response to any situation? It's to take responsibility for your part, see what you could have done differently and see what you could be doing differently to shift it. That's the evolutionary stance. But how many of us live in that stance? Not most of us. And even if we do once in a while, not most of the time, right? We also have a habit of avoiding difficult truths about ourselves, about others, about our circumstances, rather than just always facing the truth directly. The brain scientists call these cognitive biases. The psychodynamic theorists referred to them as ego defense mechanisms. And there's a whole bunch of ways in which we're constantly deceiving ourselves because we can't bear the truth. Big problem if you want to evolve. If you want to live in reality and help it move forward. We also have a habit of thinking small and thinking short term rather than in a larger long-term context of what's for the greatest good. Now, I've just been speaking about all of these habits as though they're distinct habits. And in some sense, it can be helpful to look at them and address them as separate issues or habits, and certainly do that in my own work where we break it apart. But from another perspective, it's really valuable to recognize that these are all expressions of one thing. Everything I just described makes up what you could call sort of the character of what's traditionally, in a spiritual context, been known as the ego. And I hope you can see that the ego that I just described is a huge problem if we want to live an awakened, liberated, evolutionary, creative life. Because as you can see from everything I just mentioned, the ego's agenda is the very opposite of what we might call the agenda of spirit or the agenda of the evolutionary impulse, which we can see if we look at it, its larger trajectory. It's an agenda toward positive change. It's an agenda toward the manifestation of the good, the true, and the beautiful in ever more elevated ways, ever more complex ways. That's what we discover when we discover that evolutionary impulse in ourselves, the spiritual impulse in ourselves. And it's what we see happening in the world, where it's playing out. You see, the ego just wants to keep things the same, even if they're not very good. It wants to keep things safe, small, secure, known, familiar, which means that this greater impulse has no ability to flow through us. We can't access it. Now, when confronted with this part of us that does not want to evolve, it often begins to feel like a kind of intractable force. Like no matter how far we go, no matter how inspired we get, it seems like this small self reassembles itself again and again. And it's not that we don't make progress. I'm sure we've all made progress. But it feels like no matter how much progress we make, the possibility of a radical leap out of ego continually eludes us. It's always kind of out of reach. And I have to say, seeing how tenacious this pattern is part of what helped me begin to understand why some of the great traditions saw the path to enlightenment as something that can take many lifetimes. It's this thing like seemed so immovable. It would seem like, well, it's going to have to take many lifetimes. And also, in today's progress, and I'm not teasing the traditions there, because in today's progressive spiritual subculture, I guess you could call it, modern spirituality, there's also a lot that we read that tells us that it's unrealistic to imagine that we could evolve beyond ego at all. We're told that we should lower our expectations because we're only human, which means we're limited, I guess. I'd rather use the word human to refer to our higher potential, say we're becoming human. But anyway, that's the mantra. Hey, we're only human, relax, take the pressure off yourself to change. You can't really go that far. There's a kind of modern spiritual consensus that says that the spiritual path at best is just a sort of gradual, gentle process of self-improvement, and that we should basically accept ourselves and everything else kind of as we are and all of our limitations. And at face value, this sounds reasonable. It sounds very humane, gentle, psychologically enlightened. And I have to admit that after confronting the ego in myself for years, I almost came to that same conclusion myself. And indeed, I probably would have come to that same conclusion if it hadn't been for this collective support and commitment of this sacred community, this evolutionary laboratory I was a part of. Because it was through that field of support and spiritual camaraderie and mutual commitment and the perseverance that it enabled, that a doorway eventually did open and a way through this puzzle revealed itself. And I want to now share the story of how that happened. And to do so, I just need to speak a little bit about the self. Now, conversations about the self are a big part of the spiritual dialogue throughout history. Right? If we study any tradition, we're always talking about the self. There's the big self, the essential self. There's the no self in Buddhism. We know about the ego self, the true self, the higher self, your spiritual self, on it goes. But whatever tradition we're looking at, whether it's historical or contemporary, we tend to hear basically about two different parts of the self, or two different selves within us, if you will. On the one hand, there's the ego, or small self, or false self, as it's often been called, constructed self. And on the other hand, there's this true self, or higher self, or essential self, or absolute self. And within the great wisdom traditions of the world, when we hear about our spiritual self, that higher true self, the unmanifest self, we're usually always hearing about a part of the self that is transcendent, meaning it is already enlightened. It's beyond time, beyond change. It's been called unborn. It's the great self that's one with all and everything. And when we realize it and discover it, we discover that we are one with all and everything, and that there's no problem because nothing ever happened, because we're, why? Transcend in the transcendent, outside of time, outside of the world. This is the part of us that's said to have never been born and that never dies. It's the absolute reality itself. And you are that. And enlightenment's generally conceived as discovering this part of ourselves that I just described, this part that's already free from everything, already awake, and then staying there and not going back to believing in the false self, the ego self that we thought we were. And in our spiritual community, our evolutionary laboratory, this is how we initially conceived of the path as well. In this supercharged environment, people regularly experienced powerful spiritual awakenings to that big self, that transcendent reality, that ultimate reality, our true nature beyond the mind. But as I shared earlier, no matter how long any of us stayed there, we'd always come crashing back down into the limited, narrow confines of the ego self. But then at a certain point, something unexpected began to happen. We started to notice that occasionally a very different part of the self would become activated. It wasn't the small, contracted ego self, but it also wasn't the absolute self, the unmanifest self beyond time and change that's discovered in traditional enlightenment. See, this new part of the self was alive, engaged, animated with spiritual presence and vitality. It was unambivalent about life, and it was excited by change. It didn't resist feedback or opportunities for growth. It thrived on them. So this was an utterly life-positive, non-resistant, spiritually robust part of the self that was fully engaged with this world. It was not transcendent. It seemed to be saying an unconditional yes to life, to change, to evolution, to challenge. And perhaps the most intriguing thing about this part of the self was that it was not awakening in meditation or other solitary spiritual practices. It seemed to be waking up in the midst of communicating and engaging with other people, with kindred spirits, engaged in transformational conversations and other creative interactions. And I have to say, at times it felt like we were co-awakening to a conscious embodiment of what you could call the spirit of evolution itself, as though that big yes, that evolutionary impulse that thrust the universe into existence 14 billion years ago and has been continuing to unfold its creativity ever since, was suddenly waking up in human form as us. Now, the great miracle of this part of the self was that it was no longer resistant to the challenge of self-evolution. It was willing to face whatever it had to face, to struggle with whatever it had to struggle with in order to evolve, in order to awaken. The basic ambivalence that most of us have about how far do I really want to go? How raw, how big, how intimate am I willing to let everything get? Was not in existence in this part of the self. And you see, the other thing about it is this was a part of the self that was not embedded in anyone's personal history, meaning most of us, you know, in our ego identification with ego, we're we've had a certain amount of life traumas and pains and difficulties and wounds that we're carrying and we're struggling to try to overcome and get past. But to a person, when they would awaken to this part of the self, that history of trauma that needs to be healed and all of these limitations, identification with limitation, and it didn't exist. Or let me put it a different way. It's not that it didn't exist. It didn't have control over the person anymore. It wasn't in the driver's seat. It was still there. It was, you could see it, you could, but it had no power. And it sort of started to pale to really insignificance. And if you've been on the path for any length of time, you can probably sense the significance of that. Of being beyond the resistance to change. Of being 100% yes to whatever life's going to throw at me. So as we begin to let in the implications of what we were discovering, what happened was that our entire orientation as a spiritual community began to shift. To what? To doing whatever we needed to do to awaken and activate this part of the self. Now, the reason this became our primary focus was that we began to discover that as long as we could keep this part of the self in the driver's seat of our life, everything else would work almost miraculously. I don't mean we became miracle works, but I mean everything would flow. Everything would happen that needed to happen. Because instead of struggling endlessly against their ego resistances, people would change immediately in response to feedback because they only wanted to grow and awaken. And they weren't identified with who they had been or, you know, what their stories were. So instead of feeling like spiritual practice was some kind of a burden or chore that someone had to do, it became this inspired engagement with the divine, really. And instead of falling back into old habit patterns again and again, people would find themselves relating to life from a place where those old patterns just didn't hold any power. And like I said, they hadn't disappeared. They just weren't compelling anymore. They didn't have any more juice. And in addition, this deeper part of the self, it seemed to have a sort of built-in, what you could call spiritual, moral, evolutionary compass, meaning it had this ability almost uncannily to respond to any situation in a way that was helpful, evolutionary, and sort of on target, hitting the bullseye. And in developing my own teaching work, I've gradually come to call it the evolutionary self, because to me, the most compelling part of its character is that it is on fire with a passion for higher evolution. It's like the spirit of change itself within us. And in fact, it quite literally feels like the very impulse of evolution itself alive within a human being. Hence an evolutionary self. And I want to point out that this part of the self is something that all of us do have experiences of. Maybe not in this full-blown, fully embodied kind of way that I've been describing the last few minutes, but you see, this, what we come to see is this is the part of us that propels us forward on the spiritual path, gets us seeking, growing, trying things. It's also the part of us that's often responsible for creative, innovative ideas and gets us to take risks in life and propels us to be vulnerable, authentic, intimate. In other words, it's there in us, but for most of us, it just tends to be embedded in there with all the ego structures, and it doesn't ever have kind of a clear, open highway ahead in front of it to really step out and begin to drive our life forward. So we taste it, we glimpse it, we step into it for a bit, and then we find ourselves back in that ego structure again. So in light of this discovery of the evolutionary self, there are three big questions facing all of us on the path. The first one is, how do we awaken this part of the self? The second one is, once it's awakened, how do we keep it running the show? How do we keep it in the driver's seat of our life? How do we align with it in such a way that allows us to remain there? And the third one is, how do we begin to create culture, community, and relationships that embody and express this evolutionary self? So those three things, if we can do them, awaken to it, learn how to align with it, and then learn how to create culture and relationships around it, everything else will more or less take care of itself. That, in other words, that will end up including everything else, driving everything else that needs to happen. And these three questions lead to what I call the three pillars of conscious evolution. And what I want to do now is share some of the core learnings about each of these three pillars and how to do them, how to make that happen. So the first, as I said, is awakening the evolutionary self is the first pillar. And that means to bring it to the forefront of our conscious awareness. Because like I said, it's always in there somewhere, in the background. But we can't usually see it. We certainly can't choose to simply step into it, most of us, yet, because we haven't found out how to do it. But in order to be able to let it infuse our lives with its wisdom and its passion, its clarity, its creativity, we need to wake it up, to bring it out of the closet, to let its light shine into our consciousness, into our being, into our life. Now, when we do this, when we begin to awaken this, we start to have a very different relationship to difficulties and challenges. We see them as evolutionary opportunities and we're not daunted by them. We also find that we're plugged into what seems like a boundless source of energy, inspiration, and creativity. And we start to feel like we're tapped into a wellspring of strength and courage, character. And we also become filled with a sense of purpose. And not personal purpose, not I know what my unique individual purpose is, because it's like we're discovering the purpose, the higher evolutionary purpose of human life. So we know why we're here, and we're engaging it, and it feels immensely significant. And in this also, our spiritual practices begin to become supercharged instead of just something we do because we think we should. And I really can't tell you how profoundly things change simply through beginning to awaken this part of the self. Just to give you one example, I had a student, Rob, who took my 9-week course a couple years ago. He had had a powerful spiritual experience when he was young, which had compelled him to get on a spiritual path, and he had been attending retreats and workshops, both Eastern and Western, for about 20 years. But he found that over time, he had gradually lost touch with that original source of inspiration. So his meditation practice basically just felt like work. And there was no clear connection between his spiritual practice and the rest of his life, and he found himself feeling chronically disengaged. He said he was even beginning to think maybe that was just as good as it was going to get, as a lot of spiritual books were saying that spirituality is just about accepting the ordinary and the mundane. But when Rob started to engage the exercises from the course and began to awaken this evolutionary self, he said he found that his original passion for awakening completely reignited. And suddenly, not only was his meditation going deeper and opening new vistas, but his daily life started to become infused with that spiritual depth and passion. And it was a little while after the course that he sent me a message, and it was the first message I had received of this kind, because I get a lot of emails and messages from course graduates about how it's impacted their life. But his message was not from him, it was from his wife, thanking me for how much he had changed, which I found both kind of funny and sweet, but also kind of profound, because frankly, and you probably know this for on the path, if your family notices you're changing in a positive way and comments on it, you know something real is happening because they're usually our toughest customers. And we often think we're changing and everybody around us says, well, I don't see it. So I knew that was quite significant for him. And I do get those quite a bit now, the kind of children thanking me for what happened to their parents or, you know, spouses. It's become something I'm a little more used to at this point. Now, in a moment, I'm going to share a couple different forms of engaged inquiry practice that you can do to begin to awaken the evolutionary self kind of in an ongoing way in your life. But before we get there, I just want to invite you to join me in a little brief spiritual experiment. And maybe you get a little sense of what I'm talking about. So right now, just take a moment and think of an issue in your life where you feel stuck or where you're struggling, challenged, not sure where to go, not sure which decision to make, maybe a big decision you're confronting and you can't quite decide which way to go. Just identify one thing. And by the way, if you have a pen and paper or something to write on there, and you can do that, just write down what it is for a moment. You don't have to do that, though. You can just get related to it. Think about the challenge or issue. How does it feel in your body? How do you feel about it? What's vexing about it? And now, just let it go, because we'll come back to it in a little bit. And so right now, I just want to invite you to set down anything you're doing. If you're multitasking or if you were just writing, just put it all down for a moment and just allow yourself to sit down. If you happen to be listening to this while driving later, don't do what I'm saying, okay? But right now in this moment, I want to allow yourself to connect with the part of you that gets excited by change. This is the part of you that's secretly happy when things fall apart or don't go according to plan, because it means that something unknown and unexpected is going to happen. It's the part of you that probably propelled you onto the spiritual path. The part of you that's interested in growth and evolution and change, the new, the unknown. It's also the part of you that wants to make the world a better place, that sees that all this could change and be different and be better and wants to help. And realize this part of you is not separate from the impulse of evolution itself. 14 billion years ago, this evolutionary impulse burst into existence. And it's been unfolding its creativity ever since. And now the leading edge of that creative unfolding is waking up in you and as you, as this part of you that thrives on change, higher evolution. It's a big yes. Just step into this part of you that's a big yes to life and the joy of being alive. And become aware of all of us in this place, alive with the positivity and possibility of the evolutionary impulse. Feel it between us. Now, from this expansive place, look at the issue that you're struggling with that we talked about a few minutes ago. How does it look from here? What can you see about how to respond to it, how to address it? You got to stay true to it, though. Stay in this bigger perspective. Don't go back into the sense of problem. Stay in the energy of evolution. Is this a problem in the way it usually seems? Is the answer clear? Just be simple and honest. If you have something to write on and you want to capture some clear seeing, just jot it down, or you don't have to. Okay. Now, that may or may not have had any impact or effect. That was just a quick little 5-minute version of a much more in-depth process that we engage in our work here. But I wanted to just run a little evolutionary experiment, see if your perspective could shift in a few minutes, see if you could get a little taste of what I'm talking about. And some of us find it much easier to just slip into something like that than others. So don't worry if you just kind of, it all seemed like it was in your imagination or it wasn't a big experience. It's not meant to be. But just a slight shift. See if anything was available. All right. Now, to help you begin to awaken this evolutionary self in your own life on an ongoing basis, there are two dimensions of practice and inquiry that I want to highlight right now. The first thing I want to talk about is what we call engaged inquiry practices. This is conscious contemplative practice, bringing our attention to this evolutionary self. So this is something we can begin to bring our attention to by reflecting on its qualities in our own experience. So we just did a little taste of that just now, but you can do that in much greater depth. And in our 9-week course, we engage in a number of specific in-depth exercises to do this throughout our week and in the mornings and in the evenings. But you can just begin to do it on your own today by just sitting quietly and asking, what is the part of me that is aligned with the evolutionary impulse, with the big yes at the heart of the cosmos? How does it feel? What am I knowing when I'm in this place? How does it bring clarity to the questions I'm facing in my life? What is this part of me that's thrilled by change and evolution? What if I were to stand in it all the time? Just gently bringing it forward, writing about it in a journal, become a kind of contemplative practice. The second piece I want to underline is that we can do that on our own in the way I just described, but we can also start to do it with other people. As I mentioned, this part of the self in our own experience first emerged in interaction with each other, with other evolutionaries. And it's still one of the main ways to invoke it and bring it forward. And this requires what I call evolutionary partners, or what you could call, you know, spiritual friends. But if you have a friend who is you have the ability to go deep with and engage with, you can begin exploring this together, talking about it, asking each other questions about it, bringing it out. If you have a group of friends, you can do it as a group. Now, for either of these forms of practice, individual or collective, to work, we first have to let go of the idea that the evolutionary self is far away, or that it's somehow something that needs to be cultivated or grown, because it's not. It's already fully formed and ready to step forward fully. And that's the experience when we get the access to it. It's suddenly fully formed and it fully shows up. And it's our deepest, truest self. And it's, wow. So you need to accept that it's always right here, right now. And we just need to learn how to give our attention to it. We need to learn how to pay attention to it, bring it forth, which means taking our attention off of what? The fears and concerns and desires of the ego. And this pushes against our assumption that we are limited, or that spirit is somehow out of reach or inaccessible, or that we don't have access to wisdom and depth and power, because most of us are wired with all these limiting beliefs. We need to challenge all of that to enable this process to begin unfolding. The second pillar, as I mentioned, is aligning with the evolutionary self. So once we've begun to awaken this part of the self, the big task becomes keeping it front and center. In other words, keeping it in the driver's seat of our life. So we all have experiences of the evolutionary self. With some simple exercises and practices, we can begin to awaken it, to bring it to consciousness. But the challenge it's very hard to consistently live in it because we have so much unconscious momentum of living in the ego, not living in the evolutionary self. So it's like home base. It's our default place we go. And I'm saying this because, you see, it's not enough to just have experiences of awakening the evolutionary self over and over. So it's not just repeating that awakening experience. We need to actually rewire our deeply rooted habits to bring them into alignment with this deeper, more enlightened part of who we are. See, unless we can learn how to consistently align with this, we're going to find ourselves on a hamster wheel. We'll find that no matter how many spiritual highs we have, we'll always return to the same old patterns. We keep working away at our path, but with no living source of divine inspiration, if you will, infusing our path and practice. That real shift always remains out of sight. But if we can learn how to align with it, we'll discover that areas of our lives that used to seem like big obstacles suddenly seem pretty small and insignificant. And we find there's this living connection to spirit, to depth, to this impulse of evolution, and therefore to the meaning and purpose of life that starts to infuse and inform everything we do. And this enables us to get traction in a way that we never had it previously. Traction, I mean, on our path, in terms of real change. So this process of aligning our life with the evolutionary self is really the difference that makes all the difference. Now, I had a student named Susan who came into this work after she had been working on herself for a very long time. She was an inspired woman who had been pretty successful in her career, but she had been dissatisfied with working in her corporate job, and she felt she really wanted to make a shift to bring her work life into alignment with her deeper values and her spiritual calling. And so she was cooking up plans for a new venture that would allow her to do this. But whenever she got close to making the leap, she repeatedly found herself pulling back from the edge because of what? The fear that would come up. Fear that she wouldn't make enough money, that people would think what people would think of her for doing this, taking this risk, kind of fear of the unknown. And even though she knew better, in a sense, she knew she shouldn't let the fear stop her, the momentum of having stopped at that fear her whole life kept sabotaging her vision and her forward movement. So when she began to do this work of aligning with the evolutionary self, two things happened. First, she started to see through the fear in a different way. Meaning, because she was starting to see the fear from a different place in herself, a place that was beyond it, that had no relationship to the fear, she started to be able to see deeply that it was just an old habit, that it didn't have any power over her at all, that it couldn't really stop her at all. But more importantly, she started to discover a powerful, almost unstoppable passion arising from somewhere beyond herself that she said was so much stronger than the fear that even when the fear arose, it didn't matter. She wasn't going to be stopped. And so in this, the way she described it was, she said the momentum of her past just began to crumble. And in fact, she wrote me a little while back to tell me that she made the big leap out of her corporate job and her new ventures taking off and attracting all kinds of support that she never would have imagined. And most significantly, she's finding that her new pathway in life is filled with spiritual inspiration, and her daily life has now become a living spiritual practice and just a kind of illuminated life. So I just wanted to give, you know, an example of somebody who practically really saw the shift I'm talking about. So how do we do this in our own life? I'm going to talk about three things that we need to do to begin to align with this evolutionary self. The first is we need to learn how to notice it and distinguish it within ourselves on an ongoing basis so that we can align with it. And that means that throughout the day, we notice the different parts of ourself, when they come forward, when they recede. So we're beginning to pay attention to which part of us is dominant at each moment, the ego or the evolutionary self. And then making conscious choices as to what we align with. So as I mentioned, we have what we call engaged inquiry exercises that we can experiment with during our daily lives to help bring this evolutionary self to the front of our consciousness. But I again want to encourage you to just start doing this on your own, noticing, what choice am I making? Am I choosing to align with the kind of fears and contractions and limitations of ego? Or am I choosing to align with this big yes? And what happens when I choose one or the other? What kind of life unfolds? So we're being a kind of spiritual scientist, observing our own process of awakening. The second element of aligning with the evolutionary self has to do also with beginning to discern the differing values and motivations and different perspective of this deeper part of the self. Because, you see, although we cannot control our feeling states, meaning you're going to feel however you're going to feel and it's not really in your control, we do have the freedom to choose which motivations we act on, which values we're aligned with. So, for example, when we go into this, many of us begin to get clear that this deepest part of ourself, that one of its values is truth. It values truth, authenticity, over comfort and security. So you see, when we begin to get clear that the deepest part of ourself values truth and authenticity, we can begin to speak the truth and face the truth, even when our ego is afraid of what might happen. Because in social contexts, often we don't want to speak the truth because we don't know what's going to happen. How's the other person going to respond? We start to say, you know what? This actually has to be said. And I don't care if I'm scared. I'm going to do it. So you see, if we can begin to see clearly that our highest self has different values than maybe the ones we're used to operating from, we can now start to align with those using our power of choice to do it. So like if we begin to see clearly that our highest self is thrilled by evolutionary change, positive change, we can begin to embrace change, even when our ego is scared to death of the change we know we need to make. So you see, this evolutionary self can become an anchor for our entire path. It becomes a radically different reference point in the self, enabling us to follow it regardless of how we feel in any moment. Now, the third part of aligning with the evolutionary self might be obvious based on everything I just said, but you see, in order to be able to do either of those first two, we have to also get to know our own ego very well, which means we have to be willing to face all the unconscious, often not very nice parts of ourselves, all the primitive habits and all the stories that we're inside of and the limiting beliefs we hold on to. But the good news is that that is much easier to do when we're becoming anchored in the evolutionary self. Have you ever noticed how hard it is to take feedback about a character weakness in yourself? It's a really hard thing to do because our ego always wants to defend its good name. And if it can't succeed, we tend to collapse into a negative self-image. But when we're becoming anchored in this higher part of the self, we can actually begin to face and confront the most primitive, unevolved parts of ourself without reacting because we know they're not who we truly are. We've discovered ourselves to be something else, so we don't need to defend. And that enables us to begin to choose not to align with these egoic structures and elements in the psyche. And again, we have a lot of specific tools to really begin to work with that in the course, but this is something, what I'm describing, you can do on your own right now. So if we can do these three things, we can bring our actions into line with the deeper truth that we've discovered. And this gives birth to an extraordinary sense of integrity and a kind of unanticipated experience of freedom. It's integrity because now we're living in alignment with our deepest values and our deepest knowing. So we begin to feel a kind of wholeness that most people really have never tasted. But we also discover this freedom because we now have freedom from the momentum of our conflicting emotions and our habit patterns. We're no longer just a product of our past. We're free to begin to create a very different life and world than we've known before. And I'll come to the third pillar now. The third pillar of conscious evolution is about creating relationships, community, and culture that express this part of the self, this evolutionary self. And I'll be a little briefer on this one because I already said some things about it. The point of this is that, you see, we cannot do this alone. And I know many of us, if not most of us, sense this. There's an immense longing to come together with other spiritually aspiring evolutionaries, to leave behind this solitary spiritual path and come together in sacred partnership to transform and evolve ourselves, and in doing so to also begin to evolve our collective interiors, our culture, and our world into a kind of expression of the unity that we discover in our deepest spiritual experiences. It's an impulse toward unity, toward communion, coming together as one. And so finding ways to begin to do this together is so critical because we're social creatures. We're always taking cues from each other. So who are you taking cues from all day long? Often people who aren't interested in higher things like this, who aren't vibrating at this higher level of consciousness, if you will. So we need to find or create a supportive social relational matrix that amplifies this evolutionary self into relationship. And I'm not in any way degrading solitary spiritual practice, because that's also important for us to do our own work. But I'm talking about the potential here for us to do this together, and then what that, the significance for the world of us starting to come together in higher ways. We're starting to then give birth to new collective ways of being together, which create prototypes for the rest of the world to follow, but also just create momentum between us. So if you're with a group of people who are really committed in doing serious evolutionary work on themselves, consider it one of the greatest blessings on your path. If you're not, I would really encourage you to find ways to do it. Obviously, as I've said, in the work we do, it's part of what we do that's been very powerful for people. So, I mentioned at the beginning of the call that I'd share a bit about how you can go deeper into the transformation I'm speaking about. But before I get to that, I want to just finish the story that I've been sharing, really, about my own journey. And this is really about my own journey as a teacher and how I came to be doing the work that I'm doing now. So going back to that evolutionary laboratory, when we discovered how to awaken and align with the evolutionary self, honestly, it was like we had discovered spiritual gold, if you will. Because, you know, it was like, oh, these are the keys to the kingdom that we've been trying to access. So I decided to create an online course to share everything I had learned. And I drew together all the resources I could to create what I felt could be the most cutting-edge evolutionary program that I could imagine. And most importantly, a program that would take people through this process of awakening to and aligning with the evolutionary self together. So I brought together many of the leading thinkers in transformative education to get their input on it. And we were asking, how could we create an online program delivering a truly transformative result using leading edge online technologies, online learning technologies, but also leading edge transformational learning practices. And so we all pushed in together to develop a step-by-step 9-week process that would give people access to this shift. And once I had the program developed, I just sent out an email to everybody on my own email list at that point, letting them know about the course. And the course filled up in 2 days. I thought, oh, wow. So I added another section of the course on a different day, and that filled up in a week. And then I taught those first two courses, and the feedback was utterly overwhelming. People consistently said that the course had given them the tools to access and sustain a depth that had eluded them for decades of spiritual practice. I heard it over and over again, and I could see with my own eyes that this evolutionary self was awakening in people, and it was changing everything. Needless to say, I was really excited because I realized we had been able to duplicate in this virtual systematic 9-week program the kind of deep transformation that we had been discovering in our little evolutionary laboratory, and that typically takes people, you know, years, if not decades, to really engage. So what happened was that after those first two courses, people started telling their friends about what had happened, and this word of mouth kind of viral thing, as they call it today, started to happen, and suddenly the whole thing just exploded, and demand for the program went through the roof. And I'm continually in awe of what's happening within and between people as this virtual evolutionary community grows in depth and in clarity and in oneness. So if this kind of transformation interests you, I just want to take a few minutes now to let you know about an upcoming opportunity where you could experience this course for yourself. So if you want to learn about this course, you can go to academyforevolutionaries.com. It's academyforevolutionaries.com. And in fact, there's a link to it on the webcast page below the play button, below that little arrow that says Academy for Evolutionaries. You can just click on that link and it'll take you to the webpage for the course. And in a few minutes, I'll go through some of the practical aspects of it. But first, I want to just briefly speak about the big picture. So again, that's academyforevolutionaries.com, or click on that link. So in essence, what we're doing in this program is we're doing the deep work of first awakening these higher motivating forces in the psyche. And then we're doing this deep rewiring of our being that allows us to bring our life into alignment with this evolutionary self. So it's not simply an informational course, it's a transformational journey into a whole new understanding and experience of what it is to be a human being. So if you scroll down to the section that says what you will learn, you'll see there's an overview of the core modules that we go through in the course. But I just want to take a moment now to speak about the transformational journey that we're going to go on over the 9 weeks. So first, what we do is we take a deep dive into what it really means to have an evolutionary relationship to life and how this relationship to life is so radically different than a conventional relationship to life or the ordinary life. And this is really the overview and context for the whole course, in which we come together in what it means to step beyond ego, what it means to awaken into and align with the evolutionary self. And we also begin to, and the significance of it. And then we begin to build the field for the course by connecting with our own intention and aspiration and each other's intentions and aspirations, and begin to build a momentum to carry us through the couple of months together. Then we spend a whole session doing deep experiential work to awaken the evolutionary self in our own direct experience. So this is where we get our first big taste of the evolutionary self and begin to discover this radically different way of being alive that's born when we just simply step into this deeper dimension of who we are. From there, we spend a session immersing ourselves in a very different part of the self. You remember earlier I spoke about the three parts of the self, the ego self, this unmanifest or transcendent dimension of self, and then how we discovered the evolutionary self. Well, I still hold that it's very important for us to have the experience of traditional enlightenment, of awakening to that self we are that's beyond time and change, that's transcendent, that's one with all and everything. So we spend a whole session immersing ourselves in that, in the ground of being itself, discovering our unmanifest essential nature beyond time. Because it's my experience that this has to serve as a kind of purifying influence on our evolutionary work. Otherwise, our ego can try to hijack the evolutionary process and make it its own. But if we're constantly letting go of everything, doing a practice of letting go, of returning back to zero, back to the transcendent, that we're nothing, where none of this matters, that it sort of balances out this surging energy of this evolutionary self that we're awakening to. So after we've done these two deep dives into these deeper parts of who we are, We then spend a session exploring the nature of the ego in our own experience. So we're looking at the ego universally. What makes it tick? How did it come to be? How does it operate within all of us? But then we look specifically in our own case to see how it operates in us, because we each have our own version of it. And the point is, we need to get to know it so that we can begin to make the free choice to move beyond it. If we don't know it, it's still going to find all kinds of ways to stay in control. So this is about bringing radical awareness to our own ego structure and seeing its universal and personal nature. So from there, we've done a deep exploration of each of these three different dimensions of self. Then we do an integrative session where we learn how to move between all three of them and to explore the differences between them in our own experience. And so what this does is it gives us a clear, tangible reference point for each of them, how to tell them apart, which is one of the keys to freedom, you see, because now we have the ability to choose what we are aligning with moment by moment. And many people who go through that particular course session find it to be immensely transformative, because they say, oh my God, I had no idea I could move so freely between these different dimensions of the self. I so often feel so stuck in my ego, and yet I realized it's just a choice and it's actually right there. And this is they kind of discover the doorway, the access point, and learn how to flow and step back and forth. So it's it's an amazing experience, this particular session where we do that integrative piece. Then what we do is we try to then take it and ground it all in very practical terms. This is where I go into what I call the principles of an evolutionary relationship to life, where we're really looking at what this looks like in day-to-day terms. How does it show up? What are the kinds of choices that I make when I'm aligned with the evolutionary self versus the ones I make aligned with the ego? How is this different way of life truly different in all of its practical ways? So it helps remove any ambiguity we might have around what it actually looks like, tastes like, feels like to live from this deeper part of who we are. Then we come to what is for many people the most powerful week of the course. And this is where we learn how to access what I call the four spheres of enlightened motivation. Now that may sound a little abstract, but you see, for most of us on the path, motivation is the key to the whole thing. You see, if we look at what the problem with ego really is, we see that it's fundamentally a problem of motivation. The ego can be looked at in a lot of different ways, but at its root, it's a drive. It's a motive force. It's a drive to stay safe, secure, a motivation to keep things small, known, familiar, a drive towards self-preservation and self-contraction away from the bigness, the uncertainty, the complexity, and the intimacy of life without boundaries. So if we're gonna evolve beyond ego, we need to discover a greater motivating force than the ego, a larger drive, a motive that's stronger, more powerful, more compelling to us than the drive of the ego. And so these four different spheres, which I don't have time to even explain what they are now, but they're really four different dimensions of enlightenment, I guess I would say. They're four what would be called spiritual realizations, different stances within the self, different motivational centers. One having to do with awakening to our interdependence, one having to do with awakening to our own nature as evolution in motion, another having to do with awakening to beginning to see life through the eyes of spirit or God or the divine, and another having to do with looking back on our life from the clarity of the end of life at what's most important. And this tends to be often what gives us this deep access to spiritual depth and a different level of drive. Then we go into a session on evolutionary relationships, meaning how do we create relationships that express all this in our own lives. But we also look at all the different relationships in our lives and how to relate to all of them from this different part of who we are, because many of us are in relationships with people who don't share our higher spiritual values and aspirations. And therefore, we don't know how to often navigate those when we're awakening and our friends, partners, colleagues are not. So we look at that as well. So it's really bringing all of this down into the relational dimension so that, again, we can begin to live this 24/7 in our lives. Then we do a session, and this is then brings us to our final course session, which we do part of it on what I call evolutionary leadership and vocation. And what I mean by that is not just for people who are in a leadership role, but what I mean is that for any of us who are awakening, who are evolutionaries, we are very often the most conscious person in the room, wherever we are. We're very often the person who sees the most, has the most clarity about what to do. So we are, by our very nature, we're all called to be leaders, even if we don't like that term, and even if we're ambivalent about it. And so in this session, we look at, well, what are the principles of evolutionary leadership that we all need to live into to really help move the world forward? And then we bring it all together, everything we've looked at on the course, and look at what it takes to live all of this in an ongoing way, and how we can set ourselves up to sustain everything that we've awakened to and opened to. Now, there are essentially two ways to go through the course. You can attend the sessions live when they happen, or you can listen to the recordings at a time that's convenient for you. And typically on each course, we have about half the people going through it live, about half the people listening on their own time to the recordings. And I get really positive feedback about both ways, so it's not that one's better than the other. Now, in addition to these 9 course sessions, there are 8 90-minute group Q&A sessions with me, or group coaching sessions. And many people say they get as much out of these as the course sessions, because this is where we really dig into how to apply all of this to our actual lives. So even if people never ask a question themselves, they find that listening to my responses to each other's questions illuminates the actual practice of all of this in powerful ways. Also, in terms of these Q&A sessions, you can just post your questions for me in writing, and I respond to them live during the calls, and then you can listen to the recordings later. So even if you can't come, you can still interact in that sense with me. You can have a look on the academyforevolutionaries.com website there to see what some people have written in about it. We put some of their comments up there, people writing in saying it's been such a profound experience and why. The response from graduates has been ecstatic, I would say. Now, many people who have never taken an online course, I know, wonder if there can be an authentic experience of intimacy and connection with other people through an online forum. And I just have to say that I am continually amazed, and so are other people, at what happens between participants in this kind of virtual environment. So, in closing, I just want to say I am so excited to be able to offer this course to you in this virtual format. When I first started on the path, there was no Academy for Evolutionaries that I could attend. But now, with everything we've brought together, it's really possible to go through this process and in 9 weeks begin to taste the fruits of this radically different relationship to life. So if you're feeling called to this, I would love to have you with us. We have an extraordinary global community of people deeply engaged in this work, and we're all finding that the more of us who are committed to this, who are working in this container, the more we can all benefit from the updraft. And whatever you do on your path, whether you join us now in this evolutionary journey, or whether you continue on your own, or do this with another group of people somewhere else, I just want to say, don't settle. Don't settle for less than the deepest, most profound spiritual possibility you can imagine. Because in today's world, there's so much out there telling us to settle for less than everything. But don't believe it. The part of you that senses that something extraordinary is possible is right. That's the deepest part of you. So listen to it and align with it and you'll find your way. So I just want to thank you for joining me, for listening, for giving your attention and your heart to tuning in here. I want to wish you all the best in your spiritual journey and in all of your life adventures. And I hope to meet you somewhere along the path. Thank you.